The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
This is The Hard Shoulder with Jonathan Healy in for Kieran Cuddihy. And this part of the programme is Winners and Sinners. Every week, we look back on the week that has just passed by with a few twists. And I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Esther McCarthy, who is the lifestyle editor at the Irish Examiner, and Joe O'Shea, editor of CorkBio.ie. You're very welcome to Republic of Work. Thank you for coming in.
Cheers.
Found.
We're going to begin with winners. We are all winners, of course, because it is the Friday of a bank holiday weekend. But your choice for winner this week, Joe?
Fairly obvious, and Daniel Whiffen, the swimmer, who's got the most incredible aura around him. He's a fantastic character. And what I love about him is his confidence and his swagger. Because let me just set this up for you, right? The Los Angeles Olympics, 1984, a very famous intro in the Irish Times by their main sports correspondent about the Irish swimmers. And the intro was, first the good news, none of our swimmers drowned yesterday.
It's a low starting point, so, I grant you, yeah?
So, like, to see this generation, I think Whiffen kind of represents this new generation of Irish sports people, and Rashida Abdelleke as well is a great example of this, of having confidence, of going into the arena. Because I'm old enough to remember when you'd be depending on a random show jumper or some guy into sailing to get one medal for Ireland.
Yeah, do you remember, was it John Tracy that accidentally came third?
I don't mean accidentally,
but nobody was expecting it.
Nobody expected it. Yeah. Silver, 1984. And that was a lifetime moment for me, because I remember, because it was so rare to see an Irish guy up there at the very top, you know. But now Whiffen's coming along, and he just walks into the pool and he does his little, you know, signing the book, and he walks around with a swagger, and it's fantastic to see.
But it's not necessarily overconfidence, Esther, either. Sure, it's not. It's just calm.
It's knowing that he's done the work and knowing that he's entitled to be there. It's that sense of confidence that we were kind of missing for a while, wasn't it? Mm. And my kids used to do competitive swimming. Not up to the Whiffen standard now, to be fair, but you know what goes
you
into
clearly
it.
Like, didn't get up
and
early
I say the
enough.
Used to because I was no longer willing to. But
parenting failure there.
Do you know what I mean?
But they're grand. Medal.
They won't drown. You know what I mean? They can swim, get over it now. Like, but it's so, I bawled, cried in the car. I was driving somewhere and I was listening to the radio and the power radio. You know what I mean? I was just imagining it and I bawled crying. I was so proud.
But we are in this weird space whereby we're doing quite well at this Olympics. I mean, today, earlier, we were obviously celebrating the rowing and Fintan and Paul's achievement. And we're just not used to it. It's something that the Irish are just not used to.
And also the fact that, you know, a lot of these sports are still voluntary run, you know, by volunteers all over the country. We've won one 50-metre pool, like two 50-metre pools. One in Limerick, one in Dublin, none in Cork.
None in Cork. We get
nothing.
Anyone listening?
we can might as well drone down here. Nobody cares. But, you know, we don't have the college sports that they have in America, which is an absolute conveyor belt of brilliant sporting talent from every college in America in every single sport. And we're still now seeing this fantastic generation of Irish athletes. Yeah.
I referred on air yesterday to the gymnastics jumping event because I couldn't remember what it actually was. But, you know, we are seeing these. Do you find yourself, Esther, pretending that you're a bit of an expert on these things? You know, oh, that was an amazing dive, only for the commentator to go, oh, they messed that one up.
Same
with gymnastics. It's called, she made a mess of that. What a perfect landing.
What an amazing 10 out of 10. Oh, yeah, I think I'm missing everything. And I told me, like, I could do that. You know, as she's like defying the laws of gravity because I did gymnastics when I was in fifth class. You know what I mean?
She did an awful lot, didn't she, Joe?
Wasted sitting here talking to you, Jonathan.
But we have got the other side of it, of course, that we're not even halfway through the Olympiad yet. And the track and field is only getting going today. And we're looking to Rashida Adeleke and loads of other sports and disciplines that the Irish have medals hopes in. I mean, we went in with ambitions to get about seven or eight medals. We're on four.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I've never watched an Olympics as closely as I've watched this. And this is in work as well. I've got it secretly on the kind of the idea.
But you're a journalist.
I love to watch. But I've been watching everything. I've been watching, like, I really enjoyed the women's sevens. Rugby was incredible. It was mind-blowingly good.
There was a part of it where there was one Irish player had to go up for the ball and then she was bending over backwards and someone else had to support. It defied the laws of physics.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just it's fantastic. And I think The opening ceremony was nuts, bonkers. I had no idea what was going on, and it went on for like 3 days. But but Paris is really, I think it's shaping up to be an all-time classic Olympic.
Yeah, it really is. Your winner is Mother Nature, Esther.
Yeah, staying with other swimmers, just not whiffing. Very good news this week for Mother Nature. There was three lovely things that happened that I thought I'd share with you. So the first one was a North Atlantic right whale, which is critically endangered, hasn't been seen in Ireland in 114 years. And it was spotted off the coast of Donegal this week.
Oh, I got a good flight with Ryanair,
didn't I? Yeah. I got a good bargain. And they only know it was that because they didn't believe it at first. This fisherman just took some shots and sent it in. And apparently there's a particular lice that grows on only the right whale, the North Atlantic right whale, that creates these kind of white markings or whatever. So he's basically a bit...
Because he's a bit riddled.
Infested.
Yeah, he's riddled.
Oh, it's great. An infested whale. Fantastic.
Exactly. But it's extremely rare, and they've described it as a glimmer of hope, the fact that these are coming back now again because they, you know, whaling, obviously, and getting tangled in nets and all these kind of things there. But 16 metres in length, so, you know, you wouldn't miss one if you saw one. Mm-hmm. The advice is stay away, don't give it space if you do happen
I'd stay away from the lice. I mean, that's enough to put me off.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, great news. And then the other thing is the tigers are roaring back. We'll go from Ireland to India. And there's a national park over there that was ravaged by poachers. They, 20 years ago, they had zero tigers. And we know endangered species and all that. And you know the way you hear the bad news and we're screwed and Mother Nature and we're killing plants. But you can see when you put the conservation elements in place, when you do the initiatives, they actually work. So now there's 48 tigers there now in 2 decades, which is very good news. So the population bounces back when you give it a chance. So that is Asaman Manas National Park, and they say overall tigers are doing very well. There was a big kind of global tiger forum that we're hoping to do, like double the numbers to 2022, but they've tripled the numbers generally in the wild.
Okay, well done,
so
the tigers. Great.
And then the third one, I couldn't do wildlife and Mother Nature without Cork. So there's two new cute little pups, meerkats, down in Fota. And that are doing very well. And they're
so these are the little fellas now that stand up on their hind legs and look like they're constantly petrified.
You might know them from a popular advert on TV. Yes. Yeah. And they're petrified. They're more inquisitive, I think. They kind of pop up and
they look terrified.
Maybe, I mean, it's just that you, Jonathan.
They're incredibly edible in the wild, aren't they, Joe?
Yeah. There's a great documentary. It's on a BBC iPlayer called Meerkats United.
Yes.
It's fantastic. And it tells the story of why they're constantly, because basically everything eats them. Right? They're like, they're a buffet,
they're
basically.
They're the Pringles Pringles
of the safari world.
Yeah, so anyway, if you want to help to name them, they're looking for help to name these lovely little puppies, pups down in Fota, you can get onto their website.
I mean, I have to say, when you go to Fota Wildlife Park, the meerkats are just inside the door. Yeah. They're one of the first things that you see. And for some reason, my kids... no matter what zoo or wildlife park we're in, they will source the meerkats. They want. We went to one in Spain earlier in the summer, and there was tigers and there was lions and there was a rhinoceros, which we hadn't seen many of before. Straight to the meerkats. Mm. Yeah. That's all they wanted.
They're fascinating though, because they're such social creatures, I think, and they mind each other and they're always kind of busy and doing that. You'd watch them for hours.
Yeah.
If you had the time.
Well, if you had the time and the effort and the inclination.
Your kids sound lovely. Mine just darted off in all different directions, so I don't get a chance to quietly contemplate.
I'm pretty sure we bought a stuffed meerkat at some point in the past as well. Yeah,
we have one at home.
Which is good. Everybody has one. Okay, they're the winners of the week. We move on to the sinners in just a minute and a couple of other things that have crossed across your desks in the last little while. But before we get to that, let's go back to the newsroom and get the latest news headlines from Eamon Torsney. Eamon, thank you very much indeed. Jonathan Healy filling in for Kieran Cuddihy on the Hard Shoulder. Let's talk about our sinners. You have picked two rather extreme ones, Esther, if you don't mind me saying.
Two bozos.
And they are quite the bozos.
I just, you know, it's like a comedy of errors. Sometimes every time I read about Elon Musk, I'm like, is he actually serious? His daughter was given out about him earlier this week because
he has an awful lot of kids, doesn't he?
He has a few around the place.
A scattering of children.
It's kind of annoying as well, like that he's, because he doesn't really seem to be doing the fathering very well. But anyway, he's not doing the online stuff very well either for someone who owns one of the biggest social platforms. So basically, he's after accepting an apparent invite from the Venezuelan president, Nicolas Maduro, to physically fight each other. Like toxic masculinity multiplied by a million. Are they for real? Like,
is Maduro now, just for the those who weren't paying attention to international affairs, was he the fellow who said, oh, I won the election and nobody believed him?
Absolutely. So then they decided that they would produce no evidence whatsoever, but let everyone know that he won by 51%.
Very much Brexit related. Yeah. 51%.
51%. He just got in there. Yeah. So then there was, of course, all these people calling him out on it and telling him he was a disgrace and, you know, he was a socialist, you know, wrecking the country and all that. So then Elon Musk jumped in and called himself, he called it a major election fraud on X. So then that, and called him out, calling him a dictator. You know, fighting words, lads, words. You know what I mean?
As we would say here in Cork, he was very much claiming him.
Yeah. He claimed him. He was looking for a baiting, like, you know what I mean? But now we've already seen him do this with Zuckerberg.
That never happened.
He ran away because Zuckerberg said, yeah, sure. And then Elon Musk, I mean, told Elon Musk that Zuckerberg apparently is like a black belt in judo.
Jiu-jitsu or judo, one of those martial arts.
Yeah.
But he doubled down on it this time, going, oh, he's only small fella, Zuck, I would have beaten him. Whereas Maduro, he reckons, is a better opponent because he's strong and big.
But he also has the benefit of an army behind him, which would give me pause for thought, Joe.
You never see Maduro without like 40 guys in uniform standing behind him, you know. So this is Elon Musk, the richest guy in the world, and he's also the most like ridiculously insecure guy in the world as well. He's constantly trying to be the coolest guy, the coolest kid, but he's kind of ridiculous. He's almost surreally insecure, and he always does these kind of things. You're kind of going, calm down, like, you know, you're the richest man in the world. Go buy an island and go and, you know, sit in the sun.
But he wants to be the centre of everything, doesn't he? I mean, that there is definitely something about him where he feels he has to inject himself into every conversation.
Yeah, it is. It's bizarre. I mean, he spent $44 billion on Twitter, basically because somebody kind of called him out and said, well, why don't you buy Twitter? And said, well, maybe I will. And he went away and
why don't you solve world hunger? Yeah, you know, maybe use his insecurity for good. Yeah. But he basically said, like, if Maduro wins, that Elon Musk will give him a free ride to Mars. So, you know, watch the space. Maybe we'll get rid of the two of them up into space and they mightn't come back.
That might be an option. Not a great option, but nonetheless, it's an option. I mean, if you owned Twitter, would you not just kind of sit back and watch the cash rolling in, Esther, rather than getting involved in every bun fight that's happening around you?
As Joe said, he just can't help himself. He's like that kid in school that just won't shut up, like, just know when to put your hand down and just be cute. I used to be a teacher as well, Jonathan, so there's a bit of
I think we should just call this section
PTSD from that.
Yeah, the life and careers of Esther McCarthy would
the
be a good
careers better.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll put the two of them on the rocket to Mars and hope that they get and stay there. Your sinner this week, Joe O'Shea?
Yeah, Nigel Farage. It's been fascinating to see what's been happening in the UK, and I think it applies in a big way to us as well. With those horrible, horrible tragedy in Southport, you know, with the senseless killing of three young girls. While that was happening, while the reports were coming out, while we were hearing about it, Nigel Farage joined a chorus of kind of far-right, rightish, whatever you want to call them, commentators who suddenly started, you know, coming up with all these theories. It's this guy and it's that guy and, you know, or it's this group, you know, it's terrorism, it's, you know, the Muslims, it's whoever. And he tweeted something along the lines of, well, we're not hearing the truth on this. Questions are not being answered. You know, conspiracy theory stuff, the usual stuff, the Trump garbage. But while that vigil was going on, three families and the whole community, a vigil for three young girls that were senselessly killed, four or five streets away, we saw what was happening with the rioting going on. These thugs, basically, trying to attack a mosque, right? Now, it turns out that the kid who did it, who... unusually, the judge decided to name.
Because he was a minor, wasn't he?
He turns 18 this weekend, I think. But the judge named him to combat the disinformation going on and to kind of try and push people in the right direction. Farage, I think this is a turning point in the UK. I think people are finally waking up to the dangers of this thuggery, of this far-right mobs, basically. And I think there's been a huge reaction. Keir Starmer has made a very serious and a well-considered, you know, speech about it, and he said to people that they're going to tackle it. And he mentioned, or he didn't mention, but he very strongly hinted at Elon Musk as well and all the disinformation that's being out there. Farage has been very quiet since. He didn't go to, he's finally an MP, he didn't go to the House of Commons to hear, you know, to put his questions there.
He did social media, the usual
social media, the usual stuff.
Maybe, he's forgotten he's an MP.
Yeah, maybe he has. He's tried eight times
he's been elected.
Yeah, reflected. So hopefully, I think that, you know, people are seeing this for what it is now. It's, you know, and the Times of London today has very interesting stuff on Farage as well. I think people are turning on these guys and calling them out for what they are.
Esther, I was making the point yesterday. In fact, I asked listeners for help. I do need a lot of help when I'm on the radio.
That's why we're here,
Johnson. Yeah, that's why you're here. Otherwise, this would be a very boring segment. But I was saying, could somebody explain to me how the people waving the tricolour, claiming to be nationalists at the front of all the rallies and all the rows and all the riots we've had here, are somehow on the same side as the English Defence League and the really right-wing pro-English side. And they now have somehow managed to find themselves on the same side, and asked anybody to try and explain it to me. Nobody could. Nobody could kind of give it to me in a way that wasn't saying, it's just racism.
Well, as an ex-political, I have no clue. It boggles my mind, and it really upsets me, especially like that. The kids are seeing it and you're trying to kind of bring it back to, you know, simple terms to explain why, like, the tents are being attacked by people who say that, you know, they want Ireland for the Irish, and, you know, attacking a poor, the most vulnerable person in our country who are living in tents. How is that nationalistic and how is that Irish? And it really upsets me, actually, you know, and it's one of the things you try to get your head around. And, you know, they say, like, you have to get to these people and find out what their issues are and don't marginalise them. And, you know, that this kind of upset and this real vile behaviour is coming from some unmet need, you know, that they feel that they're not being listened to by the powers that be. And that's why people like Farage
had the survey that came out from the Electoral Commission that said that one in five, which is not a small group, one in five believe that the people are being brought in here deliberately by the government. To affect. I mean, I'm sitting there going, where's that coming from?
Here's the weird thing about that. Our government can't even build a children's hospital, right? Yeah. So if our government was trying to bring people in from abroad, they'd send them to Iceland by mistake, right? And the ship would sink.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
They missed an E.
We live in difficult times and people want easy answers to complex questions.
Yeah.
But a big thing with the guys, you know, the guys waving the tricolours, setting fire to stuff, thrill of being in the mob.
Yes.
Never discount that. You know, if you've got nothing going on in your life, right, and suddenly, I'm a patriot. I'm in a big group and we're marching for Ireland and we're setting fire to stuff for Ireland, you know. I've had people say to me, it's classist to point this out, right? It's classist to point out that a lot of them, for some reason, don't seem to be doing much during the day, right? Now, for starters, there's one thing about the working class is, and it's in the name, they work, right? People who don't contribute to society in any way and then suddenly turn around and say, we're the best of Ireland, we're the only true patriots in Ireland, all this kind of stuff. Work and pay your taxes first, right?
They don't see that as their, that's not their function. Their function is to protect the country. That's what they see themselves.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I grew up in a working class area. I've lived in working class areas all my life. I'm now living in Cork city centre, right? So I don't like people saying it's classist, you can't point this out. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's the thrill of the mob, and that's a big part.
But the overwhelming majority don't agree with that, and the overwhelming majority don't see it that way. But Esther, you raised the kids in this context. I am fearful that, you know, I'm not sitting over my children's shoulders looking at what they're looking at on TikTok. And, you know, every now and then you might get a little bit of a bleed of information that comes through, and you have to turn around and say, well, who told you that? And that's what's worrying, is that this disinformation is being built upon a tower on social that perhaps you, me and Joe and a lot of the people listening will never, ever see.
100%. And it's very, you know, it's in the background. It's just scrolling, that, you know, and we don't know what they're doing. And it's really important to sit down and have the conversation. And can I have your phone? What do you think that means? Just keep talking. The Andrew Tate thing really brought it to a head for me then, when I realised, you know, when it blew up with him with Greta Thunberg and I was mentioning it on a work call or something.
They all knew who
he
was.
They all knew who he was.
I know.
And I was like, how do you know who he was? Because they're just being fed these videos. And the same as the, you know, now this right-wing leaning kind of stuff. It's just very insidious. It's very like, it's not like they're sitting down watching the news or sitting down you know, listening to specific podcasts that are, that's telling, it's just constantly on their feeds, which is really scary. And we do need to definitely keep an eye on that.
There's a huge battle coming. There's a huge battle coming now between civil society and the big social media sites. And we have Twitter, it's European
they're
headquarters.
They're all European headquarters. Mm. Helen and McEntee said that yesterday.
They're all in Dublin, and Ireland should start taking the lead on this. We can't just kind of go, ah, well, you know, what can you do? We can't do our usual thing and shrug.
Well, we do that very well. We wring our hands and hope that someone else
but
will
then,
fix it.
You know, I think we can do it when we decide on certain things and when the will is there, the public will is there. And every bloody parent, you know.
But the question is, what will it take?
Yeah.
We've seen what has brought us. What will it take for that to happen? And I don't have the answer to that question. Joe Shea and Esther McCarthy are going to stay with us because the Any Other Business part, this is my favourite part of Winners and Sinners. And that's on the way in just a few minutes.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Jonathan Healy filling in for Kieran Cuddy on the Hard Shoulder on this Friday. We have chosen not to let Joe and Esther out of the studio. They are absolutely chomping at the bit to get out and enjoy their bank holiday weekend, but they will continue to entertain us between now and the end of the programme. Somewhat against their will, I have to say, but you're here either way. Joe, you mentioned the fact that you live in Cork City, you work in the city centre, and this is another conversation that people have had lately about whether they feel safe in the city or not. And I know you had an editorial on this recently.
Yeah, with Cork Bureau, we do a lot of stories about on this because we are based in the city centre and I live in the city centre, you know. So there's a lot of positive stuff going on in Cork at the moment. There's two huge projects. There's the Morrison Island scheme, which is going to put boardwalks on along the quays and all that kind of stuff. And there's a huge public realm thing going on with the new park, the People's Park on the Grand Parade and stuff, and along Patrick Street. That's great. But we have a serious problem in Cork and we're not talking about it enough and we're not facing up to it. Antisocial behaviour, aggressive begging, street drinking.
It's not just Cork, though.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. But from my point of view as the editor of a Cork digital news site, I'm really looking at this and I see it every day. And we have a major problem. And one of the problems is our Gardaí. We're severely understrength for Gardaí in Cork and there's not enough visible policing going on. Everybody will tell you that. You don't see enough police Gardaí on the streets. There are reasons why you can't blame rank and file Gardaí. It's problems of the second to last Temple Moore graduate school. I think it was 148 came out. Of that, 114, I think, 128 went to Dublin.
Yeah.
You know how many came to Cork?
One or two.
One officer, the poor guy. Like, what are they going to do? Put him in the middle of Patrick Street and say, right, sort it out, you know? There's a lack of leadership, I think, coming from the very top of the Gardaí. It's not proactive in Cork. We don't, and the one thing is, and Esther will know this, the Gardaí in Cork started a kind of an operation during the summer once to be more active, to be more visible, to be out on Patrick Street and Oliver Plunkett Street and the Grand Parade, and everybody in Cork going, fantastic, can we have more of that, please? We have, in my constituency, Cork South Central, three heavyweight cabinet figures, you know, Coveney, McGrath.
Two on the way.
Yeah. And they haven't, our reps in Cork have not delivered. I think our politicians, including the Taoiseach Taoiseach, have not delivered what we need. Cork is a weird foreign place out away from Dublin that nobody in Dublin ever thinks about. And we get the sticky end of the lollipop every time.
How much of it, Esther, is the fact that, well, and we've covered it so much on Newstalk, and we were talking this week on Newstalk Breakfast, Shelley Gray was talking about how the smell of weed has gotten significantly worse in Dublin, and that's just symptomatic of the other problems. So we focus a lot on the antisocial side of Dublin. Is it that we're ignoring it, that if it's happening in Limerick and Cork, it's not as bad as Dublin, so therefore it's not as important?
Well, tell that to the 14-year-old who gets their phone robbed, you know, at 6 o'clock on a Friday. I was talking to some younger people, which means younger than me, like in the 30s, and like the drug things that are going on. Like, I know we think of heroin and, you know, these really bad drugs, but like cocaine is everywhere. Yeah. Like literally everywhere. No one I know in their 20s and 30s goes into town, you know, it's drinking and maybe again after COVID, we're more used to kind of socialising at home. But they say it's too dangerous. They won't go into Cork City. And then all that has a knock-on effect.
But isn't that a self-perpetuating problem?
Yeah, it is. And it's awful because, some of the best nights of my life were in Cork City, you know, standing outside that fountain. And it's really important to socialise. And, you know, we don't have the nightclubs anymore. We don't have the same things that were there 20 years ago or whatever. But the... just because it's not as bad as somewhere else doesn't mean it needs
but
to
the
be
aggressive begging
tackled.
That you highlighted, right? At that, there was always begging.
Yeah.
It was always the case that there was begging.
Was there, though?
There would have been an element of it.
Very little.
Yeah, but
very little.
The nature of it now has somewhat changed. There's a kind of an air of menace around some of it, Joe, which, I mean, I'm a 48-year-old man.
You're 28 for your day.
Thank you kindly.
What lighting is in the studio?
It's very bad lighting, which lets me get away with it. But, you know, I don't scare easy. But even I've started kind of, you know, there was an incident recently where I was walking behind, there was a lady walking in front of me and there was I'm going to call him a slightly weird chap.
Yeah.
And he was kind of leaning in towards her and trying to harass her. And I stepped in because I said, why? But I had my daughter with me at the time, but it was just to kind of get him away from her more than anything else. And I'm saying that not everyone's like that. Not everyone would kind of, you know, get involved in that situation, but it's happening more.
It is. And part of the problem, you can walk across Cork City Centre in 15 minutes. Mm. It shouldn't be that hard to police. What we have is large groups of people who have obvious mental health issues, addiction issues, whatever you want to call it. And that's a whole other story, the reasons why. But on a very basic level, if we have visible policing, proactive policing, I lived in London for 5 years relatively recently. And in London, the Met Police are absolutely ruthless with this kind of stuff. Yeah. Like the one thing they do, they take the drink off people. Like in Cork, you'll see people sitting on the South Mallor or Grand Parade.
Well, there's bylaws for that, Joe.
Yeah,
bylaws.
But there'll be people sitting there for hours with slabs of drink in front of them or drinking hooch out of bottles, and they just sit there all day, every day.
Look, I want to spend my Saturday is not to do with you, Joe.
I didn't want to bring it up, but you want to cut back on that. You know?
And perhaps the reason why you have to spend your Saturdays that way, Esther, is that we are now officially halfway through the summer holidays. If you have children in primary school, more than halfway through if they're in secondary school. Is it just me? I'm a kind of patient. Just wearing a small bit thin.
Good segue, because we need something other than just a cup of coffee to get through the long summer days. I wrote my column at the start of the summer. You know, we only have 18 summers with our children.
That's a nice thing, isn't it?
The cats in the crane. And I genuinely was like, oh my God, I have to cherish them and make memories and my beautiful children. And I'm like, get out of my hair. I'm allergic to y'all. Like, it's so hard, Jonathan. Like, my problem is they expect to be entertained all the bloody
time.
Were
we this annoying as children?
We probably were, but we were out for 8 hours of the day and then we annoyed them.
Get out of the house and do not come back.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Here's a sandwich and a bit of brown paper.
Oh,
go
posho.
Away. Do not come back.
Like, I mean, I think back to Wimbledon. It was obviously a time a couple of weeks ago, but you know, Wimbledon was always a big thing because we just all go out and the neighbours would go out and we'd all play tennis badly.
Yeah.
You know, that occupied a week and then we might do grass forts and then we do this. I know there's rose-tinted glasses here, but the amount of time being spent sitting on arses is phenomenal, Joe. I don't know what it's like in your house.
Well, I worked with my dad. My dad was a small builder, about 4'8". The old family joke there. And I used to work with him a lot. But also it was like, you know, go and entertain yourself. I used to hear that a lot from my mother. My mother worked. So she was like, you know, I don't want to hear it. You know, get out. Also, do you remember, Bob? I was only thinking about this the other day. Bob a Job with the Scouts.
Yes.
We used to do that. And I just remember it was child slave labour, basically. Right. Somebody would say, like, build me a kitchen extension and they give you 75 pence, you know, after 4 days.
But now to try and get them to just do the dishwasher.
Yeah.
And we didn't even have a dishwasher back in the 80s.
We didn't have dishes. It was that bad.
See, someone told me I'm my own worst enemy because I'm refusing to let them go on the screen. You know, I'd have a nice quiet life if I let them go on their screens and they are talking to their friends and the thing and all that. But I don't want them to do that, but at the same time, I don't want to organise and micromanage them down to the last second either.
I'm not as good a parent as you. You know, the screens do feature in our house, but they still give out. They still moan and complain. And you know, getting them out of their own way is 95%.
Well,
if my children are listening, I love you dearly, but just do the dishwasher, please.
Yeah.
It's like my 15-year-old said to me, he's like, why don't you do what you used to, because I was stressing about the 9-year-old, and he's like, why don't you do what you did with us? And I was like, what did I do? Because I can't remember. Like, I read one, you know, study that says says you should parent gently, and I'll do that for a few weeks and then I'll merge them the next week. You know what I mean? So they used to have a list of jobs that they had to do before they could go on the screen. So I was like what? I genuinely couldn't remember. That could be perimenopause now as well, to be fair. I can't remember what I did yesterday. But he was like, we used to mop the kitchen, we used to hoover, we used to do the dishwasher, we had to do it. Now they both do their own laundry, the two older fellas. So to be fair, now that I'm listening to your like disastrous tales, I'm kind of going, maybe they're not too bad. But it's just, it's, do you know what? We were doing this play date, which I hate as well, that term. Like, play date is so American and annoying. But
it means
know,
that you're taking someone else's problem for a few hours.
Yeah, which is grand because it's reciprocated. I'm very lucky with a fabulous group of buddies and all that. But your man was coming and I was like, do you know what? We'll go to Fota. So I know I was on commission for Fota. I'm not. I was like, we'll go to Fota. Like, that was a once a year out.
I hear there are new meerkats.
Did I tell you about the meal? Only 1999. But, So I was like, yeah, we got one. He's like, nah. And I was like, you spoilt little so-and-so. And it's my own fault. But like, going to Fota Langoa would have been such a treat. He wanted to go on an inflatable.
Can I just point out the difference between Joe O'Shea, you and me, is Joe hasn't said anything bad about his
family.
That's
the only one.
And she's an angel, probably. She's great fun. And we actually hang out and she just
we have mad fun together.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, on that cheerful note, Joe O'Shea, you can go home to your happy family. Myself and Esther will go home to World War
IV. We'll go to the pub.
Yeah, we'll even miss him. We'll even miss one. Esther McCarthy, lifestyle editor of the Irish Examiner, and Joe O'Shea, editor of CorkPure.ie. Have a lovely bank holiday week.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.